Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones. And now, here's Clinton and Leslie.
Well, good morning, Clinton.
Good morning, Leslie.
How are you, honey?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm sorry. Did my exuberance frighten you a bit there?
I just had the mic level up a little bit too much.
Well, you know, I'm loud.
Loud and proud. And
yes,
that is,
I am.
That is one of the many reasons why you are lovable.
Aw, aren't you sweet? So, how has your week been?
My week has been okay. How's your week been?
Really busy and complicated by the fact that I got a cold. And
oh my.
I really believe.
So I was lying. My week has been like yours, busy, but not as busy as yours because I've been basically just watching you be busy, which is fun that should not be missed by anyone.
I'm glad my freakouts have entertained you.
Such a case of Schadenfreude. You just don't know.
I'm so glad my freakouts have entertained you. That's nice to know. But I seriously think that getting sick, especially with something as trivial and frustrating as a head cold, mm-hmm. should be outlawed after 30. Have that legislation passed? Because, I mean, seriously,
just,
I'm sitting here.
Can we just outlaw sickness like, after 45?
I am like, I'm sitting in my kitchen, like, you know, sneezing and you know, the congestion. I'm blowing my nose. I'm like, I feel like a 10-year-old. This is crazy. Like, I'm a grown. I am a grown-ass woman. I should not be having to deal with this.
So, So this week, I got my first sty in my eye.
I hate those.
And didn't know
what it was.
All you knew
was that your eye felt weird and there was this pain, and
it was, you know, painful to actually look. Uh-huh. And so I say maybe too much to ask. And so weird. So thank goodness there's Google.
Yes. Yes.
But maybe it's too much to ask that people don't get sick after 45. But can we say that once you reach 45, no new sicknesses?
Right. Not right?
Anything that you haven't already gotten, right? You shouldn't be able to. So to get new things, it's like, yes. What the heck?
I know. No, I got my first sty when I was like 9.
See?
And like, seriously.
So at this point, you'd be ready for it.
I'd be ready for it. I'd know exactly what it was. I'd be okay. Yeah.
Like, it took me a couple days to first realize that something was wrong. And then, you know, it's a quick Google to figure out what can't be done about it.
Exactly. It just has to go away on its own.
Five different websites telling you to suffer through it.
Mm-hmm.
There you
yep.
go. Anyway.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Craziness. It sucks getting old, man.
It does.
It really does.
It does. But fortunately, getting old means we get to do this show.
Yes!
Not
yes!
necessarily true, but an attempt at a segue, nonetheless.
And this show, particularly, we have some really cool guests.
We have some very cool guests.
Yes!
Why don't we get to them?
Yes, let's get to them. Yes, coming to us from Lua, Estrella Knott, and Dave Brzezinski.
Is it Estrella or Estrella?
It's Estella.
It's Estella.
Estella. Oh,
gosh,
okay.
Darn it.
Estella.
Yeah. Estella. Estella. See,
Estella.
I know it wasn't just
but
Estella.
Everybody calls me Stell or Stella or Estella, you know.
Okay, but do you hate that?
No, I don't. I've gotten used to it, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate when people shorten my name.
Yeah.
I hate it. I'm like, no, I'm not less. No. No, put the other syllable on there, please.
See,
Thank
here's
you.
The thing. You are so not less.
Right?
You are more.
I am more. Exactly.
You are so much more.
Yes. So I'm just going to call you Estella because okay. that's your full name.
That's my name.
Okay, so you guys are here to talk about the Charlottesville Sabrosa Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But first, let's talk about Lua because I've been so looking forward to this interview.
Oh,
because we if you don't know from our show, frequently, actually every week on our show, just about every week, we do announcements about what's coming up. So we've been announcing your stuff, and the descriptions that we read of your band are so interesting. It's like like on your Facebook page, it's Mexicalation
music,
and then there are other descriptions like a blend of Latino, Appalachian, Jewish. And it's just like, wait, what? So what is your band? What do you guys do?
Well, we've been playing music together for over 20 something years. Yeah, 20. Almost 20 years. He's like, don't.
He's saying, stop 19, counting.
Yeah. and so it's been sort of like a progression to this point, you know, where I grew up in the Shenandoah Valley, mm-hmm. And, you know, clogging and, you know, dancing to old time and bluegrass and singing, you know, old time tunes and show choir and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Oh,
but my
choir.
Mom is from Mexico, and so, you know, because they're weren't any Mexicans in Luray when my parents were there, you know, people kind of looked at my mom a little weird and you know, but my mom's perspective was always like, people are afraid of what they don't understand.
Right.
So we have to teach them about Mexican culture. So from that point on, every year we would have a community fiesta, and so she taught me and my brother and a bunch of kids from our local church how to do like Mexican dances, and I would sing songs. So I grew up also, you know, singing rancheras and mariachi tunes in Luray, Virginia.
Oh, wow!
So, bless
so
your
cool.
heart.
That's how, you know, the whole like Mexalation thing started to come together.
Uh-huh.
And then when I met David, this is years and years later, when I was in Charlottesville, for the first time, looking for myself after college, like most people do, and mm-hmm. trying to figure out like what I wanted to get into. I was doing singer songwriter, like jam band kind of stuff. And I went because people were telling me about this stuff called jazz.
Uh-huh.
And I'd heard jazz before, but I didn't know, you know, like exactly, I hadn't heard it live, you
right.
know? So I went, and Dave was playing with some friends of his at Miller's. I was just listening to this beautiful music. At the time, I was like a counselor for a family counselor, and was traveling all over like the region.
Right.
It was intense, fresh out of college. And I was just sitting there absorbing this amazing music, and went up afterwards and was like, I really want to learn more about this music. And I ended up talking to Dave, who was playing with an African griot, Shikamalaji Abate, at the time. And he's like, hey, we need a singer. You know? And so, and I was like, that's awesome, you know? Well, I'm sure I can do that. And so I started playing with Dave and Shikamala, and I was like, whoa, I didn't know how to play polyrhythms. I couldn't stomp clap, you know, at the time. Like, I was just like, maybe I should get into my own roots music, you know? So we, you know, started playing together just in general, and then we went on a long trip through Latin America for a year and a half. We traveled together for a full year, and then we went our separate ways, he in Brazil, me in Peru. And when we came back together, this band evolved that was with some local friends who were still part of our band.
Right.
It started to move more towards like, hey,
is that Maddie
Son Jarocho music, this music that we'll play you a song.
Mm-hmm.
Son Jarocho music we found when we were traveling in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I'd always wondered, like, how in the world could somebody like my mom, who's from Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua, Mexico, big city in Mexico on the border, like, meet up with my country dad? How could they possibly have anything in common, you know?
Yeah.
And so we got to Mexico, and someone introduced us to this style of music called Son Jarocho from Veracruz.
Uh-huh.
And they do a lot of the similar kinds of rituals that we do in Luray. They meet, it's a weekend, meet out in the field, everybody brings camping stuff, and there's a platform that's set up to, you know, do clogging, zapateado, you know, and then they have a family of instruments that they play, like, you know, we have, you know, bluegrass and old time music. There's the banjo and the guitar and, you know, fiddle and that sort of thing. Well, in Son Jarocho music, they have the jarana, you know, and then they have the requinto, and then they have another instrument called the leona, which is a bass instrument, and then the foot, the dancing is the percussion, and then the lyrics are poetic, and there are lots of different lyrics, just like, you know, Rocky Top has like a whole bunch of different kinds of verses to it. Son Jarocho is similar in that there are all these different verses that they throw in there. It's amazing.
Wow.
So instantly
we
want to bring these musics together because there's so much bridging that could be done, you know, through those two styles of music.
Okay, now I want to hear it.
Okay.
I'm excited.
All right, so everyone get readjusted.
There you
go. All right, let me see.
Ready?
All right, this is called Coco. Coco's a bird. Barcos están parados porque no les supe el sur, porque no les supe el sur. Los barcos están parados, sí, por
eso no he entrado para aquí. Tú sabes la cruz, para aquí. Tú sabes la cruz, sí, por eso no he entrado. Coco,
coco, eres prieta en el carizal.
Coco,
ya están aburridos. ¿Qué tanto cantar?
Love the polyrhythms just in that.
I know. It's amazing.
Right on.
Oh my gosh, that was so fun. So Dave, how did you get into such a wide range of roots music?
Oh, okay. So for me,
I started more as a jazz musician. I was really into composing stuff. I worked a lot in college with Pete Spahr and John Durth, who've been real great mentors to me.
Oh, yeah. We're big fans of John Durth.
Yeah. Yeah. And so...
and Spahr.
So I was composing for the jazz ensemble, and I was much more interested in world music. We had a guest artist named Bob Moses, who is a real expert not only in jazz, and is a great composer, modern composers, but is also a real master of sort of deconstructing rhythms. And I studied with him for a while and learned about how to sort of analyze rhythms from any place in the world, sort of by breaking it down into a few constituent parts. And so I've always really loved that music. As we said, I was playing with a great West African guitar player, Chikamala Diabate, for a while. And then when we went traveling, we traveled basically from Mexico all the way through Central America to Peru and then to Brazil. And we were gone for like a year and a half. And during that time, what I became really interested in is, to some extent, we were starting by going into Estela's roots music by spending a lot of time in Mexico. But for me, I had, being raised sort of as a secular Jew, there was this idea where I never really had like a religious background, but I became interested in sort of the sort of a sentiment. You know, Jewish people have always succeeded by blending into whatever culture is around them and stuff. And so I started to hear that in the music that I was witnessing, you know, whether it was on the, you know, the Veracruz, the coast of the Gulf of Mexico, or in Peru or Venezuela or in Brazil. And so I started trying to find that thread. You know, when you study, when they always talk about blues and jazz, like, they're always like, well, it's these African rhythms meeting these European kind of harmonies. And, you know, and they talk about, you know, the Creole cultures in New Orleans, right, where they had, like, mixed race African classical musicians, right?
Right.
And so, but I said, like, well, there's something missing, because we don't really talk about this melodic content and sort of a melancholic feel of music. And I feel that that comes from the Mediterranean. And that's, you know, at that point, you're talking about North African cultures, you're talking about Greek cultures, you're talking about Southern Italian cultures, Sephardic Jewish cultures, and other things. And those things find themselves in a lot of different kinds of music. So,
that's great. I'm not used to thinking of Sephardic Jewish cultures as being a Mediterranean culture, but of course it is.
Yeah. Right? And so, in essence, when the Jews were kicked out of Spain in 1492, you can imagine that some of the first wave of immigrants to the New World were Jews and Muslims who were kicked out of Spain. And so I was able to sort of, and of course, I'm not really an ethnomusicologist, though I play one on TV, right? But like... but I was able to feel, like, from a sort of metaphorical sense, the traces of that within a lot of the music that I was really drawn to. And so as we came back and started writing music and came up with this idea that we wanted to move further away from a sort of cosmopolitanism in music, right? Because initially when we had Lou, it was almost like a Latin rock jazz jam band kind of thing, right? And so as it became more and more about Estela and I putting together music, and as we were improving our skills and not like sort of riding on the back of the people that were playing with us, who we thought were better musicians than us, we felt a responsibility to get deeper into our own concept of the music. And so we started getting to the Mexilation idea because we realized that formally, in terms of the form of the music, right, there was a lot of commonalities between Appalachian music and Son Jorocho music. And so... we got into that, and then more recently we got a grant from the Virginia Foundation for Humanities to kind of go deeper into this. And so we have been doing these shows with a friend of ours, Zenén Zeferina, who's a master singer and jarana player of that tradition.
Who's going to be here for Sivo Sabroso.
Who will be here next week for Sivo Sabroso.
Awesome.
And so we realized that there was all these commonalities. We had an opportunity to essentially rewrite a new traditional music by taking the original Son Jorocho pieces and maybe writing more about what's going on in Appalachia, what's going on with immigration to this part, right? And so the question, of course, is, like, I'm sort of the token Jew of the band, so what's my role to play in this? And so I just basically went inside myself and tried to get into the set of skills that I think I bring to the table, but I think is also, like, kind of culturally relevant as a Jewish person, which is picking up the ingredients of things around you and trying to craft them into something coherent. And that's sort of how I feel about myself as a person. But the more I've gotten into understanding my own roots culture, the more I realize that that is sort of an endemic trait of Jewish people throughout history. So So basically intertwining these things together and then finding opportunities to utilize, if not traditional Jewish melodies, that we do that in some songs, but, you know, the tonality things, harmonic minor scales, various kinds of, a lot of the structure of Latin music, you know, if you think about it, is to distinguish it from North American music, is that in American modern music, pop music, jazz and stuff like that, you're really talking about the tonality thing coming out of the blues.
Right.
And so when you're looking, though, at 20th century music in Latin America, even stuff that is very heavily influenced by African rhythms like samba and Afro-Peruvian music, criolla music and stuff like that, the melodic orientation of it is definitely based around classical music, oftentimes, you know, 19th century classical music.
And so, if you're
looking at what brings, so the chordal structures are based on European folk forms, whereas, like, in America, you know, a lot of, like, the blues form is essentially based on a pentatonic scale.
Right.
So, in essence, I sort of am holding all these things together. So as I'm crafting arrangements for what we're doing, you know, I'm just trying to be cognizant of, like, what are the elements of these different kinds of musics, and then bring these things to the table. And certainly within Latin American folk song forms, there's a lot of these movements between, like, for example, a minor one chord and a dominant five chord, in which case the very, you know, Jewish tonality, the harmonic minor scale, which is not necessarily a specific Jewish scale, I mean, but it's throughout the Mediterranean, and brings a really, you know, poignant and melancholic feel to things, that is a perfect scale to bridge that sort of harmonic structure. And not to be, you know, too nerdy about this, but that's where I sort of found my entry into this space, that I could bring what is natural sounding to me into it in an authentic way. And that's, you know, we're sort of at the beginning stages of pulling this together, but that's what we're doing.
Cool. So we've got to do a drop, and then we're going to come back, see if we have enough time for to ask a one more question and maybe hear another tune.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, my God. And welcome back to Homegrown here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. It is now 23 minutes past the hour, and you are listening to Homegrown. And if you have just tuned in, oh my God, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, you missed a great
song. You have missed a great first segment, and we're going to hear another song. We're going to hear another song from Lua. Yes, right?
Awesome. So this one is called Blue Ridge Mountain Boy. I wrote it for my Uncle Jimmy when he passed away. No, it's not C minor.
This is more of American tune. It's
on San Jarocho instruments.
Bravado major key. All right.
wanna set me free. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for coming and sharing this with us. It's absolutely amazing music. You can see them performing at the Charlottesville Sabrosa Festival.
Actually, no. Uh-oh. We will not be performing at the festival. I organize the festival, but you can come and see us every Thursday night at the Bebedero on the downtown bar. On the Downtown Mall above the Whiskey Jar. On the Downtown Mall every Thursday from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Yeah, but so at Sabroso, awesome. I organize Sabroso. It's too much to play.
Right. and very quickly, tell them what Sabroso is.
So, the Cielo Sabroso Festival is a Latin American music and cultural festival, dance and cultural festival that we do every year. It's going to be this Saturday coming up from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. We got groups from Mexico, from Argentina, from Brazil, from El Salvador. We have an actual band that's coming from El Salvador to play at the festival this year.
That's amazing.
So come on out for that, definitely. The Saturday's at Ix Art Park. 522 2nd Street Southeast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Take that, white supremacists. Oh, I'm sorry.
Pride is on the same day.
Yes.
Pride is on the same day. Yep.
Yes. Yep.
This is what Sivo looks like. Mm. This is
Thank
what
you.
Sivo
That's
looks
right.
like.
Yes.
Eat it. So we've just got, we have 30 seconds, but there's
you guys have to come back. You guys have to come back.
We would be happy to.
Yes, yeah. Because this is gorgeous music and more people need to know about it.
Awesome. Well, we'll bring our friends too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. If we can fit the whole band in here, we will do it.
Only right. two more people, which is great.
So, okay. Yeah.
We can fit Maddie the whole band. Stewart, right?
Let's go.
Mandolin, fiddle. Yep.
I know both Maddie and Stuart. Yep. Great guys.
All of them. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yay.
Thank you, Estela.
Estela.
Dave. Estela. David.
And Luna.
Thank you, Luna.
Thank you so much. Lua here on Homegrown.
Thank you.
All right. So I guess are we doing a list?
I guess we'll have to do the list.
Yes, we have
told them we would do the list.
Yes, now we have to do it. See, look at you making work for us. Oh, jeez, Clinton. All right. Currently running September 23. PEP, the Performers Exchange Project, performs their continually developing piece, The Convolution of Pip and Twig, at Live Arts. September 17th, starting The Rocky Horror Show at Shannon Arts in Stanton. Okay, so you can't bring rice. Okay, don't bring stuff. It's not the midnight movie thing, okay? But it's an awesome show. Go see it. September 12th and 13th, Charlottesville Writer House instructor Lisa Ellison leads two-hour members-only seminars, Setting Goals and Planning What's Next. September 15th through the 24th, August Wilson's Jitney at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. Y'all should seriously see that, because I directed it. Clinton is in it. Like, why would you even, like, think of missing that? Today, auditions for Sweet Charity at Live Arts, directed by Maria. Okay, it's spelled oddly, but Maria Rife. Music direction by Kristen Baltus and choreography by Heather Powell. All right. Tomorrow, it's Queens Who Read at the Central Branch of Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Miss Dreama Bell hosts a reading of stories that feature inclusive diversity and an open discussion afterwards. 12th and 13th, Charlottesville Writer House. No, that's a repeat. Sorry. UVA's Freiland Art Museum presents an informal lunchtime talk about the museum's collections and exhibitions on September 12th. September 12th, DMR Adventures presents their youth talent show. Wonder what that is. September 15th, local author Elizabeth Mead Howard reads from her book, Aging Famously, Follow Those You Admire to Living Long and Well, at New Dominion Bookshop. Also on the 15th, local author Fred Shackelford discusses his latest suspense novel, The Ticket, at Northside Branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Third Friday's improv workshop at Piedmont Virginia Community College, Lighthouse Studios' 16th annual Youth Film Festival at the Paramount Theater. And if you don't know what that is, I think they were on the show last week.
I think they were.
I think that, yes. Listen to that podcast and, you know, find something out.
Mm-hmm.
The 15th through the 24th, no, that's a repeat. September 16th, Charlottesville Writer House invites you to Poetry Song, a monthly pizza party celebrating the lyricism of poets and singers during the first half of the evening, TJ and Jess will lead the group by sharing some songs and poetry. During the second half, you bring something to share for the open mic at Charlottesville Writer House. September 18th, Charlottesville Writer House instructor Michael Cordell starts a six-week course, The Fundamentals of Screenwriting. Oh, wow. We might have to do that, Glenn.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that. Well, I do it.
In what time? In what time do we have to do that?
Okay, fine. Jeez. He always says no, people. September 19th, instructor John Most begins an eight-week advanced poetry seminar on Tuesday evenings at the Charlottesville Writer House. Previous workshop experience is a requirement. Ooh, requirement. That sounds stark. Instructor Kay Kaufman brings an eight-week seminar to the essential elements of nonfiction on Tuesday evenings at the Charlottesville Writer House. And on the 20th, instructor Hannah Barnaby begins an eight-week seminar on Wednesday evenings on writing children's picture books. Oh, cool. Instructor Helen Channer brings an eight-week daytime seminar on Wednesdays to the Charlottesville Writer House on nonfiction. And for your music options this week.
Today, Patrick and Aaron Olwell and friends at Elmar Cider Works at 2:30. Brooklyn Rider performs as part of the Charlottesville Chamber Music Festival at Old Cabell Hall at 3 o'clock. David Tewksbury, our man with the plan, at Glasshouse Winery at 3:30 p.m. Also tonight, King Golden Banshee at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub on September 12th. Travis Elliott is at Fellini's on September 14th as part of the Charlottesville Chamber Music Festival. 9, visiting virtuosi perform music for small ensembles, including Tchaikovsky's masterpiece for sextet, Souvenir de Florence, at the Paramount Theater. Also at September 14th, the Michael Ellswick Gathering and Tyler Dick at Fellini's. On the 15th, again with the Charlottesville Chamber Music Festival, it's continuing with music by Dvorak, Bernstein, Clancy Newman, and more at the Paramount Theater. On the 15th, catch hits from the 50s and the 70s, covered by trio South Canal Street Band at the Glasshouse Winery. On September 15th, Mojo Pie at Dirty Nelly's, Pickin' and Grinnin' Open Music Jam at James River Brewing Company. On the 16th, it's the 6th annual Seaville Pride Festival, hosted by music director Remy St. Clair and entertainment director Dreama Bell, both former guests on the show. The Pride Festival features drag performers, breakdancers, singer-songwriters, and hip-hop showcase headlined by Nae Nichelle.
Oh my goodness. Nae Nichelle, she's headlining. That's awesome.
Indeed, September 16th, also guitar and violin paired duo Bohem present music from dreamy pop to gypsy jazz to country waltzes at the Wegmans Pub. Yes,
gypsy.
Wegmans is even appropriating music.
Wait a minute, I'm gypsy jazz. Okay. All
there
right.
You go. September 16th, Willie D at Albemarle Cider Works, Two Buzzards and Bob Girard at Knight's Gambit Vineyards, former members of Mongrel Steve Wilson and David Bernard at Rapunzel's Coffee and Books, Lightning Road at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub, and Evan Munk and Curtis Prince and the Clairvoyants at Fellini's.
And the Clairvoyants?
You should have seen that coming. You should have seen that coming. And of course, every Friday morning, it's a West African Drum Circle at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. And also, Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Every Tuesday, it's the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. And on Wednesday, your night for frights, open mic night at Proray Nada Farm Brewery, open mic night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo, the Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9, Bachata Fusion at the Ante Room, presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club, and the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And of course, if you're not worn out through Wednesday, you should go on Thursday to the John Dearth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while,
you just got to come down to Dearth.
And those are just some of your artistic opportunities in our artistic town.
Whew. Oh my God, that was a huge list.
It was a lot.
That's a lot.
I should have trimmed that sucker down.
I know, right? Clinton just decided to put everything on a list.
We like to big up everyone, but we want you to be informed. We do.
That's what it is.
Go out and
we
see
want
some
y'all
art.
To know what
people are doing. Shit.
Yes, that's right. Ooh, ooh, FCC's coming for Clinton.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, he said a bad word.
No, it would be a bad word if I called Ajit Pal, the director of the FCC, a corporate shill that's trying to sell off net neutrality.
Okay.
That would be bad if I said that.
Well, if you had said that.
Right.
But you would never say that.
But I would never say that, at least not using any,
No.
foul words.
No, no, not at all. Not
like 35 minutes past the hour, and a Jeep pal can suck. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art. Who cares about net neutrality, unlike a Jeep pal, head of the FCC?
Oh, my God.
Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. His guest is going to be Nakia Walker, talking about her and Nakia Walker and her experiences at the Unite the Right rally on August 12th.
Wow.
Let's stop digging our own grave.
I love Nakia. She's awesome. Awesome. Yeah. She and I did a show together years ago. She's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Have you ever... oh, my God. We should get her to come on and read some of her poetry.
Ooh.
It's amazing.
Dig it.
Yeah.
Set that up.
Yeah. She's
Make
got,
the hookup. Reach
she's
out.
She's got some great
you know
stuff. Yeah. She's amazing.
You know
she's an artist.
You know
she is an
also,
artist.
You know who's also amazing?
Who?
Our next guest.
Yes! That's it! Welcome back, Amanda. How are you?
Hey, it's so wonderful to be back here repping the Women's Initiative.
Yes!
Today.
Woohoo! Yes, we have Amanda Cormant and Ariel Perkins. Hi,
hello.
How are you?
Hello.
You guys have to share that mic.
Yeah, you have to share. We don't have that many mics. Sorry.
I was freaking out.
We're low budget.
Yeah. You should be afraid to move it. No, really, it's just a bad mic stand. So you have to scoot around.
So you guys are here to talk about the annual writing contest, right?
Yeah, so this
yeah, Amanda,
is...
tell us about that.
Okay, so this is Challenging to Change, which is the Women's Initiative's annual writing contest, where we are honoring...
And first, if people don't know what the Women's Initiative is...
Thank
if
you
they
so much.
If, and of course they would, but just in case, just in case there are a bunch of white supremacists who've come in from out of town to try to beat people up and don't know what the Women's Initiative is.
The Women's Initiative is a nonprofit. We are now celebrating 10 years in Charlottesville of providing vital mental health services to women regardless of ability to pay through counseling, social support, and education.
Awesome.
And that's so really awesome.
Challenge Into Change is our biggest outreach program of the year, and so it's one of the big ways that we get the word out about our work and the fact that we are here and that we have walk-in clinics every week, and that anybody who needs some extra emotional support, any woman should feel welcome to come and seek us out. We're over on East High Street and at the Jefferson School, and we have walk-ins at West Haven. So, but Challenge Into Change is a writing contest that is about honoring women's stories of healing. And so Challenge Into Change, it's basically what it sounds like. It is asking women in the community or anyone in the community to write a story of a woman in their life who has overcome a life challenge to find hope, to find healing, to find growth, to make a change in her life. And so Arielle is last year's contest winner. And so her story, we were just talking about it, her story is really the embodiment of Challenge Into Change. And I'm going to turn it over to her to tell you a little bit more about what she wrote about and what inspired her to get involved.
Yes, please do. Yeah.
Hook us up.
I know that chair is hard to move.
Yeah,
sorry, it's really heavy.
It's an evil chair. It doesn't want to roll.
Hello. Well, I wrote into Challenge Into Change last year. And I wrote about my dealings with colorism as a 10-year-old. I wrote about, you know, just different events that hindered my, you know, my confidence, my esteem. And then the end of my essay talks about how I overcame those obstacles, how I invited self-care into my daily routine, all thanks to the Women's Initiative.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And how did you hear about the program?
So I heard about the Women's Initiative through my sister. I have a sister who is actually a licensed therapist there. She's amazing. She first told me about one of the outreach groups that the Women's Initiative provides, which is called Sister Circle, which is a inviting space for Black women and women of color to come in and find connections and gain resources. And through that small yet mighty program, I was able to find out about the Challenge Into Change writing contest. So I wrote in last year, and this particular essay did win out of 86 entries, so that was really cool. So that's how I heard about this.
So what was it like when they gave you, was it a phone call to tell you that you won?
No, one of the facilitators of the Sister Circle group, Miss Ebony, who's amazing as well.
Oh, Ebony Bug?
Yes.
Oh, I love her.
She is so amazing. She told me that I placed, and that's all she told me.
Okay.
So I didn't know. So I was in limbo for a good month or a couple of weeks.
Well, that was not nice for her to do to you.
Well, she you know. So when she actually called my name out at the actual program, I was in shock. I'm not a real emotional person.
Right.
You know. But it was an overwhelming sense because everyone there, you know, they were there to hear inspirational stories.
Right.
And, you know, for my story, I submitted it and thought, oh, it's going to be in the book. That's amazing.
Right.
I never thought that it would go that far, you know. So it was overwhelming, but it was an amazing space to be in.
I'm sure. So you're gonna read your piece for us?
I will read my piece. It's pretty deep, you know, mm-hmm. but
we like that.
But like I said,
we're not afraid of deep on this.
No, not at all.
So right now I'm in such a good space.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want people to think that this essay is like sad and
right.
you know, all these things.
Right.
I pressed my face to the window, my vision blurred by the waterfall of tears I cannot seem to control. The school bus comes to a screeching halt and kids get off, but I refuse to let them see my face. Oreo cookie, Oreo cookie, Oreo cookie was still ringing in my ears. At this very moment, the embarrassment of being dark-skinned was pouring right through my small 10-year-old body. I wish I could hide, but the only solace was the oversized red hoodie I was wearing. I buried myself in it until the chanting ceased. 4 years later, my hands are crying with blood and fatigue. The mirror, unscathed by my rage and anger, stares back at me. Phrases like, "You're pretty," for a dark-skinned girl, "If only you were two shades lighter," "The blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice," made me scream, "I hate you," to the mirror. "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you." I melted to the bathroom floor, breathless and sobbing. I am barely through my freshman year of high school, and the only person who ever told me I was beautiful died months ago. My grandfather meant it too, and at the time, I didn't believe him. 10 years later, I picked up People magazine as I stand at the counter to pay for my groceries. Lupita Nyong'o graces the cover as People's most beautiful person. I squealed with excitement, but was quickly reminded of where I was as I felt the stares of the people around me. I paid for my stuff, including the magazine, and rushed home. "Mom, look!" Barely able to contain my excitement, I pushed the magazine at her. "She's dark-skinned like me!" My mom acknowledged me with a smile, busy on her Kindle to match my enthusiasm. I ran to the bathroom mirror, the same mirror that reduced me to tears 10 years ago, and ran my fingers through the hair I had left. Just like Nyong'o, I cut my hair short and natural and have never felt more beautiful. Now, the natural light coming through the stunning wooden windows gave the studio good vibes. I placed my colorful yoga mat on the floor and watched beautiful women of color fill the space. The sense of belonging overwhelmed me as we flowed through the vinyasa sequence. As I take Warrior II pose, I began to reflect over the years where I felt angry, sad, and weak because of what I believed to be a deformity. My brown skin was a target of relentless bullying. Now my brown skin is complimented more often. I see women like Lupita Nyong'o, Michelle Obama, my yoga teacher, and my mom, and realize that the essence of my beauty is not just my smile, my brown eyes, or my hair. It is the self-confidence on the inside that generates beauty. I am a pretty brown girl.
That's lovely.
Thank you.
I see why it won. Yes.
There are so many feels. There are so many.
Yes.
You know.
So many feels.
We're going to do a drop and then come right back and talk more about that.
Yes, definitely. It is 45 minutes past the hour. And if you are just tuning in, where the heck have you been? What is wrong with you people? The show is almost over.
If we keep doing that, people are not going to want to tune in.
But
late.
I mean, really?
They're going to be like,
they've missed the first 45 minutes.
It's like, it's 10:23. I forgot Homegrown's on. But if I just start tuning in now, they'll yell at me.
Yes, I will yell at you. I will be mean mama anytime I want.
Well, that's certainly true.
Shoot. How about you set an alarm? You do that to go to work. Set an alarm. Jeez.
So let's get back to our guests, Amanda Corman, Ariel Perkins, here from the Women's Initiative and their Challenge for Change. Ariel, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to jump in and say that Ariel was talking about the Festival of the Book ceremony where she read her essay last year.
Okay.
And that is that all of our authors are always honored at the Festival of the Book, and then the winners read their essays. And so just that we love that partnership, and it really just lifts up the whole project, because we want people to feel, even if you've never written your story before, we want you to feel welcome to write. You know? It's really for new writers. We're not judging these pieces on perfect spelling and perfect grammar.
Yeah, that's what
and
I
want
to ask.
Stuff.
So
yeah.
how does the judging happen? Because first of all, that has to be, I would think, a nerve-wracking thing. Because if even half of them or a third of them are as moving as Ariel's, to have to sit there and say, okay, this one, not that one, that must be hard.
You're 100% right. It's in the way that the judges decide is about emotional impact, you know, but also about the ability to inspire others, you know. And so I think Ariel's essay is really, you know, part of it is just that it is so, you know, it's so real, but it moves to that place of showing how you made change in your life and what inspired you and who helped you along the way. And I find that so inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows it's kind of hard to be a black girl in America, period.
I don't think everyone knows that. I don't think Jeff Sessions knows that.
Oh, no.
Well, you know what? I don't really care what Jeff Sessions knows. We don't need to get into that today because you're going to make me angry. No, but I think telling especially stories about black women's struggles is something that has been missing in literature, period. So any highlight we can put on that is amazing. And, you know, just like women who are dark skinned, have been ridiculed and bullied, you know, women who are light skinned get it in a different way, you know, because I have a lot of, dark skinned friends, but because I'm a high yellow child, I felt bad because my friends who sometimes were, you know, more intelligent or more talented than I was never got the same recognition, you know, and I felt for them. I felt like I didn't deserve some of the things that I got because they weren't getting recognition at all,
right.
You know, and that's another part of, you know, that's another guilt that walks around with me all the time.
Yeah, I think it's across the board. I think, you know, the black community, you know, has these different stereotypes of black women in general.
Yeah.
So the way my story falls is that's just one particular instance. Mm-hmm. I have my younger sister is lighter, of a lighter complexion, and she was stereotyped at her job. People think that she is bougie or, you know, those type of things.
Yeah, or unapproachable.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not really the case. She's very smart and open. Mm-hmm. So I think it's across the board.
I even had black friends jokingly say to me, oh, but you're not really black. Mm-hmm. Excuse me?
For the record, I've never been one of those.
You need to take two seats right now. Right. I'm not really. It's not funny. Like, it's not a joke.
So, and then I didn't realize that my essay hits on, you know, in the black community that people don't seek professional care. People don't, you know, a lot of people don't seek self-care.
Yeah, because it's very taboo in the black community. Nobody goes to see a doctor. Why would you do that?
Right. So when I had a lady approach me and she was like, your essay hit on so many different things. My grandfather passed away. That's a very, very sad point at a young age.
Right.
You know, so to encompass so many different things, and I'm just realizing that now as I sit here and you know, talk about it, is almost... Because I would want to rewrite. I want to go back and write, you know, another story. So the inspiration is definitely there.
You should definitely continue writing.
So, and that's what I want to tell people, that 500 words is not a lot of words.
It's not.
You know, once you start writing, I know the process was one of my more favorite parts of this was the process of writing, because I'm a writer.
Yeah.
I like to write. I was at 1,000 words, and I was like, I can't submit 1,000 words.
Right.
That's too much. So I had to chop and cut and dissect and, you know, to put what really, you know, was the focal point.
Yeah.
So that's what I would like to tell people, is that when you sit down to write, I wouldn't focus on, you know,
yeah, don't focus on the link
or
just, yeah,
the grammar, the
get
spelling.
It on, yeah,
you
get
know,
it
there
on paper.
Resources. There are resources that will edit your work. You can.
Yes.
I emailed my essay to 3 different people.
Mm-hmm.
How does this sound?
Yeah.
You know, are you getting anything out of it? So I wouldn't put fear on the table. I would put a piece of paper and a pen and start. You know, that's the first thing.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. It was amazing.
Welcome.
Aw, I'm off the clip.
So, Amanda, one last question. So, are all the pieces in the forms of essays?
So, it happily, it is essays and poetry. So, yes. Yeah, so we got we heard the beautiful essay "Pretty Brown Girl," but the second place winner of the contest was an amazing poem called "Chronic Guest" by Kaidi Yang.
She's my friend.
You guys became friends at the Festival of the Book when you met each other, which is amazing. I mean, and that's part of it too, and that's part of Challenge Into Change, and that's part of the Women's Initiative, is creating spaces for women to meet each other and to connect and to, you know, and form friendships and form support networks and to be there for each other, because mm-hmm. we know that that's such an important piece of mental health, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, like, we all know that we need friends, we need our people, we need someone who we can call when we're having a bad day, right?
Yeah.
And so that's part of what the Women's Initiative is always trying to do, is just create spaces for that, safe spaces for that.
Yeah.
You know, and so Challenge to Change is, I mean I love that's another thing that happens, is that women meet each other and get to bond with each other there too. So yes, essays, poems, 500 words or less. Ariel Perkins said it here: do not put fear on the table, just put a piece of paper on the table.
Yes.
There you go.
I think that is
that's,
style.
That's the t-shirt quote
that's
for today's
awesome.
Show.
Yeah.
I am going
that is the
to quote you
for
on
show.
That 600 times. That
yes.
is the perfect
mic
way.
Drop.
Yes,
right
seriously.
There.
Luckily, not actually, because this is this one.
These
said
are,
this
these
one
are very delicate
sensitive.
Mics.
We couldn't drop that thing if we wanted to. It's so weird. I don't know. Okay, yeah.
Yes, but the Women's
how,
Initiative.
How did they get them to you? How
the Women's Initiative .org/change. We're on the same wavelength here, Clinton. The Women's Initiative .org/change. Just give us a call. We got brochures at our office. All the information is on the website. You can submit online. You can submit in person if you prefer, paper and all that stuff. You want to just print it out and bring it in, that's great. And we're accepting entries through December 15th. So get started. We also have a writing class beginning on Tuesday nights that is completely 100% free for women. So just come on down.
Woo!
Tuesday nights at the Women's Initiative. If you're looking for a place to start, don't be afraid to get started. Put that piece of paper on the table.
That's awesome.
Put that fear away.
Excellent.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank
you guys.
Thank you so much, guys.
Wow.
All right. What a show.
That was an awesome show. I mean, some beautiful music, some beautiful writing. I'm like,
are you moved?
I am.
Are you moved?
I am.
Are you moved?
Okay, I won't say what just came into my head. Right now. I'll tell you after the show.
Really? Really? I called out Ajit Pal and Jolly Jeff Sessions, our grandma Clampett. And there was something that you were too afraid, you thought that was too far to bring on the
air.
Yeah,
it was a little too far.
All right.
I don't think. No, we can't go there. Not yet.
Well, you know where
maybe
we can
soon.
Go.
Yes.
I'm like Segway King today.
You are. I love it.
Do you know where we can go?
No, Clinton. Where can we go?
I believe we can go to Leslie's Weekly Rant.
Ooh, hi. I like that intro. That was good. So for the first time this past Friday in over a month, I walked on the downtown mall. For the first time, I walked along the length of shops. I strolled up and down the bricked walkway and bought a ring for my mother's birthday. I looked at scarves and hats. I contemplated going to a movie or seeing a concert at the Jefferson. It was also the first time I didn't feel threatened doing so. I saw friends and hugged them. My mother, my friend, and her 15-month-old son strolled along on a lovely Friday evening after having dinner and dessert at a local restaurant. It was almost idyllic, until my mother pointed out that the Jefferson Theater was the white theater, while the Paramount was the black theater, which is why she had never heard of it. she never went there because it was a place that even in her lifetime, she was not allowed to go. And in that moment, the tragic reality of the town that I have called my home came crashing back into focus. The truth about Charlottesville is that it has always been segregated, even after segregation ended. There were still spaces that brown-skinned people knew they were not wanted. No signs needed to be posted saying whites only. When my grandmother brought me to the mall when you could drive up and down the street, we got dressed up to go into town. I liked it. I felt special going with her to Woolworth's on Sunday in our Sunday dresses, hats, patent leather shoes, and gloves. It didn't occur to me until much later that we were dressing up so we would look like we belonged there. Charlottesville has always been segregated. After July 8 and August 12th, there was a fear running through me that I had never felt before. I had never walked down any street in this town and wondered which person on the street wanted to kill me for something I can't control. I had never questioned the odd looks that I've gotten as I walked into a restaurant with a white man. Well, no more than I usually did. Now I find myself questioning them more. Is this the person that's going to follow me to my car? Is this the person that's going to start screaming racial epithets at me? Or will they simply walk up to me and begin beating me or pull a gun? Never have I wondered this more than in the past month. Friday, as I wrapped my arms around Cornell West for a hug, as I was given the opportunity to introduce him to my mother, as I listened to him encourage me to continue the fight I've joined, as he called me sister, I felt another thing I had never felt in my life. Equal. Dr. West greeting me as an equal, and us talking about the things I'm doing in town and his agreeing to come back and see it made me realize that we are each as much of a national treasure as Cornell West is. We are all important, and therefore the work we choose to do is just as important. So I will never be afraid to walk down that street or any street again. I am a citizen of this country. I was born here. My concerns are just as valid as anyone else's. I will never again be swayed into silence or self-segregate where I go. I don't need a sign, just like my mother. I will not accept it. I am black. I go with everything. And I will not stop until all those invisible signs telling people who look like me that they aren't welcome are gone. And if it makes you sick, you shouldn't either. And that's the weekly rant.
All right.
Really, Rick?
That's our show for today. This has been Homegrown, your show about local art here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We want to thank our guests, Estela Knott and David Brzezinski from Lua, and also, of course, Amanda Corman and Ariel Perkins from the Women's Initiative. Stay tuned for your fantastic and fun friends with the Sunday morning wake-up call. Their guest. Their host is Rick Moore, and his guest is Nakia Walker, who is aiming to be on city council, and she's going to talk about her experiences at the Unite Rally, at Unite the Right Rally on August 12th. Thank you very much. Thank you, Leslie. See you next week.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.